Hi everyone, I'm Dominique.
And I'm Adriana.
And we are Survivor Sisters. Survivor Sisters is a podcast and organization that shares the stories of sexual assault survivors to educate, empower, and inspire other survivors and their peers to take action against sexual assault on college campuses. For today's episode, we are sitting down with Nora Gallo, who is currently a senior at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's also the vice president of It's On Us, UMass Amherst chapter, and she does advocacy work with Every Voice Coalition. And with that, we're going to hand it over to Nora to tell her story and share her healing journey.
I'm Nora, and I'm a senior at UMass Amherst, but I'm also a local to the area. So growing up in Amherst, I went to Amherst High School. And when I was a senior, I dated this guy that was 4 years older than me. He was a senior at UMass Amherst, and everybody thought he was really sketchy, and he was absolutely really sketchy. But he was really abusive, very controlling, verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, not very physically abusive, but slightly towards the end. And then also it took me 2 years to realize that he was also sexually abusive. I went to college. I went to UMass when I graduated high school thinking that, you know, I'm totally like, it's gonna be safe. Like, if anything happens, like, I can call my dad or my mom, like, they'll be here to pick me up in 5 minutes. And both of my parents, like, the dorm that I lived in my freshman year, both of my parents were literally, where they worked on campus was a 1 minute walk from my dorm. My mom's a doctor at UHS and my dad is a professor of biology at UMass. So I remember my freshman year just hearing so many stories of my dorm mates and friends being assaulted. And that makes sense because it is the red zone. It for freshman year girls predominantly, the 50% of assaults happen within the red zone, which is between September and November. We're still in the red zone. It's actually ending today. I'll talk about that more later when I talk about the Every Voice Coalition.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But I remember that happening, and then I still remember thinking, silly me, thinking like, this can't happen to me, like on campus. Like, I know myself, like, whatever. But I was also still very afraid. Like, I talk about myself, it's like I was this different girl. I was scared. I didn't know how to communicate things with people, but I also kind of did feel safe. So I went, it was my sophomore year, I met this guy and things were going really well. Like, he was really sweet. We'd go out to get lunch and eat food. And then he brought me to a date party and he assaulted me at his date party. And then afterwards is when my life began to really unravel. So after that, I ended up realizing, I told, my roommate found out, I didn't really tell anybody because I didn't know exactly like what it was because I still had a very botched definition of consent in my own mind because of this relationship that I had with my high school boyfriend where, you know, no wasn't effective, stop wasn't effective, he didn't listen to me at all, and he would also, you know, tell me to drink bottles of wine, like, if I didn't, like, drink a whole bottle of wine, and, like, if you don't, you literally, like, the classic, like, you don't love me. Very, very coercive. And so he would have me drink to points of blacking out. And then I'd wake up in his bed, naked. So it's, like, that kind of made me not realize, especially when it was, like, one of my first relationships being sexually active, not knowing that I could say no would be an effective word to use, not understanding boundaries of consent. So once I realized what assault was and that it had happened to me, I knew what rape was, but I didn't realize that because it wasn't this sort of brutal attack where it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't bleeding, I wasn't bruised, I wasn't found like somewhere. It was, for me, it was this very like, I wasn't me, like it didn't happen to me. Denying it because if once I did admit it to myself and once I did start to realize that it had happened, it's when the floodgates just came crashing open and I developed many allergies, random allergies to fruits and vegetables. I couldn't sleep. I wouldn't fall asleep until like 3 or 4 a.m. some nights. And then I'd sleep in and wouldn't be able to wake up for classes. I couldn't focus on anything. I'd have panic attacks during math tests and other tests. And so I wasn't doing well at all in school. So I ended up having to withdraw. That was my sophomore year. So that was fall of 2016 going into spring of 2017. And after that, it was just this process of me drinking way too much, I wasn't making good decisions for myself because I didn't know how to almost.
Yeah, I love what you said about how you didn't really even realize that this happened to you.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like this violent attack or things like that. And I think that's a really common misconception that a lot of men and women have when they are sexually assaulted. They're like, oh, you know, I wasn't, you know, found in a ditch somewhere. I wasn't, you know, beat up. I wasn't all these different things. And physically, you may be totally fine.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that you weren't assaulted. I feel like because of the word assault, people think like, oh, like you need to be like physically beat up and held down and all these different things. And sometimes it's just like what you said from past experiences, like you didn't realize what a healthy sexual relationship, sexual encounter even was. You didn't know that you could use things like no and stop and that those would be effective things because that didn't work for you. And we all learn from our experiences. Thank you so much for sharing that. I just wanted to talk a little bit more about how you were affected in like the aftermath of everything. And also, when did you realize that this was a problem?
Yeah, it was when I told my roommate the morning after what had happened. I was like crying and she was the one to tell me that I'd been raped. And after that, I went to the doctor to get an STD test. And I told her something happened. I didn't want to do it. Something meaning sex. And I want to get tested. And that was, she just didn't, like, she, I felt like in that moment, like, looking back now on 3 years ago, in that situation, I feel like she should have kind of picked up on that and been able to say, okay, was this a consensual experience? Mm-hmm. And, or, you know, was this something that you do? Do you want to talk about this more? You have options here. So I was like the first adult that I told, I was like, kind of was like, this doesn't matter. Like it made me feel like I was like, okay, so that's confirmation that what happened to me isn't a big deal. And so I didn't talk about it again for the semester until finals week. I absolutely broke down. I remember losing it, having this massive panic attack and having to call my dad and sit on my hands until he came because I thought I was going to kill myself. So he came, I just blurted it out what had happened, and he, like, it was like the last day I had to move out of my dorm, and so like he was helping me move out and I was just crying, and it was, my dad has been my rock through all of this. I'm so grateful for him because he got me into counseling at CWC, which is the Center for Women and Community at UMass Amherst. I went in once a week with this lovely woman. I cannot remember her name. She was a wonderful counselor. If anybody goes to UMass that's listening to this, please go to CWC if you need it. But I went to counseling once a week for an hour, and it was where I started to then also talk about my relationship in high school. And at the end of that, my sophomore year, I ended up withdrawing from about 10 classes because I was not doing well at all. So then I sort of was just like, okay, like, whatever, this is behind me. I didn't want to report. He was a very, like, sort of, the one in college was very kind of prestige frat boy, and I remember I saw him at a party once and I freaked out. I started crying and like ran upstairs and like I ran into a room where this guy was, and I was like, he was like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And so I told him that there was a guy here who I was scared of. And so he was like, what's his name? So I told him his name and he said, oh, he's in my frat. I'm the president of the frat. That president made my perpetrator leave the party, and then that's when I got messages from guys that knew my perpetrator telling me that, you know, I was a slut and like I just hooked up with him too soon and I was regretting it. And so that was probably also a huge reason why I didn't want to report. I was scared. I was so scared of, I was dealing with all these emotions flooding in, and I just did not want to go through that process. And I'd heard horror stories of Title IX at UMass and across the country. So I just sort of put all of that behind me and I started my journey to putting my pieces back together.
So I think it's really great that your dad got you in with counseling, because that can really help survivors process their traumas. Personally, I think it's really important. Did you want to expand a little bit more of the work that you did in therapy and anything else, any other counseling that you've done since then?
Yeah, so since then, I'm a dance major and I've been dancing my whole life. So being in dance classes was really healing for me, because it was a way to connect to my body and to be able to have control over what my body did, and to be able to do it in so many different ways was really profound for me. So dancing has been a huge part of my process of healing, being able to create connections that feel like they've been severed. Then my therapy, I'm in EMDR, which is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. And that is a way of repatterning the way that your brain processes the traumas that have happened to you. So I do a technique where it's tapping. So my therapist, she's incredible. She comes up and she sits next, like right in front of me, face to face. And I'll just sit with my hands in my lap or crossed, but I'll close my eyes or I'll keep them a very soft gaze. And she'll tap either side of my knees while I think about how my body feels. Because I'm very, very, as a mover, I've been trained to be very, very hyper aware of my sort of internal going ons. So I hold a lot of trauma in my right hip and in my womb area, and also around my sort of my shoulders and my chest and my breasts. So with her, I think about how those feel, and I think about being able to find freedom and be able to find release and be able to find love in those areas that are kind of in constant, like, discomfort or feel like they're... So it's a weird way to explain it, but it's like I'm constantly realizing that I have this sensitivity in my body of my chest and of my right hip to be able to then find ways to release that through the tapping. She guides me through it. It's like, how does this feel now? Are there emotions attached with this feeling? Keeps tapping. Okay, how does it feel now? We've done things where the first part of therapy was actually thinking about the room in which it happened and changing it. Basically, like, okay, so be in that room and let flowers grow on the walls. And I'll do that. And like, it ends up, I used to not be able to drive by that house. And now I can drive by the house. So it's definitely, I've noticed that I have been able to have this complete shift in the way that I react to triggers day to day. I used to have dissociative episodes for like pretty decent periods of time. Like sometimes I'd like be dissociating for like an hour to 2 hours where I wouldn't be aware. It's gonna sound, for the listeners that don't know what dissociating is, like literally not being able to know what is reality and what is not. So I'll dissociate and I'll be like, okay, this isn't actually happening, this isn't real. And it was also linked to a lot of suicidal thoughts. Like, if I killed myself right now, like, it wouldn't actually happen because this you know, reality isn't real. And that was linked to anxiety attacks. So with my therapist, we were working on... I kept a journal and I kept track of my dissociative episodes. And being able to pinpoint exactly what triggered them and being able to figure out how I can, right before I feel one coming on, I can distract myself or redirect my mind. So EMDR is incredible. I wouldn't be able to do the advocacy work that I do without it, because I wouldn't be able to talk about sexual assault in the way that I talk about it.
That's amazing. And I've never heard of EMDR aside from like very briefly in like psych classes, because I'm a psych major. Mm-hmm. But it sounds really interesting with the tapping. Yeah. And how like you can hold, I guess, trauma in certain parts of your body. Yeah. And you can actually feel that. I think that's really interesting. Earlier, you said that you experienced like a lot of allergies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never heard of anything like that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So it's weird. I started getting all these allergies to like avocados and cucumbers and carrots and like every like staple thing, every staple food that you need. Fiber, I was allergic to kiwis, and I'd have reaction to watermelons and honeydew melon and all these different things. It was really sad. And then those started to come up after my relationship with my high school boyfriend ended. So it was sort of knocked down to this, like, okay, you just have allergies because this happens, you know, sometimes 20-year-olds develop random allergies to things and they go away or they won't go away. So I was navigating a diet where I couldn't eat 10 different vegetables and like 15 different fruits. It was really insane. And then once I started EMDR, I was vegetarian for a very, very long time and I decided I wanted to go vegan, but I was like, I can't go vegan if I can't eat all of these like fruits and vegetables. So after about 3 months of EMDR and I was really sort of on, still on this path towards healing, I was like, I'm gonna try an avocado, like whatever, let's see what happens. And so I had a tiny bit and I waited an hour and I didn't have a reaction and I was like, woohoo! I started like trying bell peppers and cucumbers and I was so excited. And then I was like, okay, I can go vegan, this is great. I also went gluten-free at the same time, and I think that's also been a part of like being able to take control over like what enters, like doing everything consensually, like being able to take control over like what enters my body and what I do with my body. And it makes me feel really good. It's like it's one of my pillars of personal care is my diet. I started to look into like, okay, maybe my allergies were related to, you know, wanting, changing my diet and going gluten-free. And then I started to do more research into like, I brought it up with my therapist, how I lost all these allergies. And she said, you know, sometimes really traumatic experiences or very stressful life situations can trigger allergies. So I started doing some work, like looking into that, and I don't have it proved. It's my theory that allergies were linked to this very stressful part in my life that then they got worse and worse and worse until I started to address that.
That's really interesting. And I think it makes a lot of sense because sexual assault and trauma in general can affect so many different parts of your life. It's not just like mental, but it's also emotional and physical and all these different things, and it affects your relationships with other people and your work and both school or just in general and like all these different parts. And so like I've never heard of that, but I mean based on your experience, it sounds promising that maybe the two were linked. I don't know. But you mentioned that changing your diet was a part of self-care and that was a pillar of healing. Can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by a pillar of healing? And do you have any other pillars of healing?
Yes. So I have my four pillars of healing. One is personal. So my personal pillar of healing is self-care, self-love, being in therapy, making sure that I'm exercising, keeping my body healthy, and then also my diet. So I'm vegan and gluten-free, and that is a little bit intense, but it makes me very aware of what I'm putting into my body. And when I feel good physically, I feel better mentally, and I feel like I'm taking care of myself in this home that I have in my own self. So that's the personal pillar.
Yeah, it's very important to have that schedule, especially as survivors, because it really puts you in to control after like you lost your control through your assaults and stuff.
Yeah, and it's just important in general to take care of yourself, especially like survivors of trauma. You have a tendency to, especially if you're avoiding the trauma, you're not really actually actively or consciously processing what happened to you and starting to heal from that. It's very easy for you to slip into bad habits and to ignore your own health, both mental and physical health.
Yeah.
And it's so important, I think, for healing to actively take care of yourself.
Yeah. I also think that personal part is also communication and having healthy relationships, whether that be with a partner or with a friends and family. But then my second pillar is movement. So as a dancer, being able to, like I said earlier, being able to move and to be able to create connections in my body that maybe I had not before is very healing. And it's also just, it makes me feel good, and I'm very happy to move. And sometimes I make dances about how I feel. That sounds so very baseline, but being able to create dances around that.
Yeah, we actually, our cousin, Rachel, she's a dancer. She's not a survivor, but she choreographed a dance. Yeah, for Adriana. And she's gone through some rough times in her life, and dance has really been always just like this constant that has helped her like express herself, express her emotions, and tell stories through dance. And so I think that resonates for a lot, just like any form of art, especially, or any just sort of creative outlet, hobby or something, I think can really be helpful.
Yeah, I remember after being assaulted sophomore year, I actually started picking up painting. It's like,
I love that.
A little hobby, you know? Like art, kind of just like.
It's really healing.
Yeah, there's something about art that just kind of.
Soothing.
Soothing, yeah, heals you.
Yeah.
In ways that other ways, like exercising and personal health care, like, can't really heal you. So.
I really liked that video of your cousin dancing.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Everyone check it out at Instagram, at Survivor Sisters. She's an amazing choreographer. And Adriana actually speaks a written poem over the song. I think the song is Till It Happens to You by Lady Gaga, which is an amazing song about sexual assault. And it's really cool. Check it out.
Just what you said about going through a rough time and, like, dance being something for her. I remember this, it's almost like this thing in my head that I hear when I'm having a really hard time that my ballet teacher told me when I was a freshman in high school. I was going through a really hard time. I was really depressed near the early bits of high school. And she told me, you know, I've gone through really hard times in my life, but what I do is that I hold on to the bar and it holds me up. So there, I'm in ballet class now, and it's sort of, I remember that, like, it's like almost every single time I walk into ballet class, like, I'm like, I'm about to stabilize myself because I'm going to put my hand on this bar and move. And it's just incredibly healing. I have two more pillars. Do you want to hear them? Okay. Yes. Community is my third pillar of healing. And that is being able to have a group of people who I know believe me and support me. Like, it was in Summer's story, like, none of her friends would believe her. Was that Summer's story?
Yeah, mine also.
Yours
a little
too?
Bit of both. With my, when I was raped my sophomore year, my friends didn't believe me. So.
Yeah, and being in this situation where your community and your people around you, it's a toxic environment and you can't heal from that. So being in a community where I am with people who support me just in daily activities, like my activism and the work that I do, which we'll definitely talk about, is a very big part of me. But to be able to have the support from my friends and from my wonderful boyfriend and my parents, for me, is something that I need to heal. And then also thinking about how as a community we have to heal as a whole to be able to stop sexual assault, to be able to have these conversations, have consent education, have sex education, to be able to talk about this stuff so that we aren't, you know, we won't be silenced, we won't keep not talking about it, to be able to bring it to the surface as it's bubbling up right now in our society and in our country and the world, to be able to talk about that. And then my last one is advocacy. I feel because of how I am as a person, I've always wanted to be able to do things to be able to make the world a better place, kind of. So being an advocate for survivors who may not feel like they have their voices yet or may not want to use their voices is very healing for me because it's like, I'm, you know, you don't have to open your mouth, but I'll hold your hand and I'll speak for you. So the activism that I do is a lot based around that.
Exactly. And I think your last two pillars especially are what Survivor Sisters is all about. Sharing your story, speaking about sexual assault, having these conversations, being there for survivors as like a safe and supportive community that you can turn to, and hearing the stories of others, even though you may not be ready to share for yourself. Like, hopefully that just makes you feel like you're not alone. So I just want to talk a little bit more about advocacy in particular, because I know that you're pretty involved in your advocacy work. So first, I want to talk about your involvement with It's On Us. Can you talk a little bit more about what It's On Us is and your role as vice president?
So It's On Us is a national organization that was founded by Joe Biden and Obama back in 2014 in response to the epidemic of sexual assault that occurs on college campuses. So It's On Us, their mission is to educate students about consent and about sexual assault, and then to empower people with information to be able to be active bystanders. So one of the main goals for It's On Us is to get as many people as possible to take the pledge. You can do that by going to the itsonus.org website, and there's a button that'll say take the pledge. And the pledge is to recognize that non-consensual sex is sexual assault, to identify situations in which sexual assault may occur, to intervene in situations where consent has not or cannot be given, and to create an environment in which sexual assault is unacceptable and survivors are supported. So we just had a week of action in October, and I sat at a table Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday 9 to 4 p.m. asking people to take the pledge and saying that over and over again, like, by doing this, you're recognizing, you're intervening, you're, you know, creating an environment where survivors are safe, to sort of be able to have that present in their mind. And it is actually been proven somehow that by taking this pledge, you are more likely to intervene in at a party when a girl is too drunk or where a guy is passed out, and be able to just look up for your community. So as the vice president, I'll actually be the president next semester because everybody's leaving me.
Wow. Woohoo!
Congrats. Thanks. Gonna have to do it all by myself. Sophia, Molly, and Hannah, I know you're gonna hear this. I love you, but I'm really mad at you guys for leaving me.
You'll be a great president.
I hope so. As the VP, I help to facilitate discussions around whatever we're talking about, like consent, being an active bystander. I support Sophia, who is the president currently, and also the ambassador for It's On Us. You have to be to have a chapter of It's On Us, you have to apply to be an ambassador. So basically help her uphold the mission of It's On Us, which is to educate. So that's what I do. We have meetings like every other Tuesday where we talk about different things like how to navigate party culture and hookup culture. Can you give consent when you're drunk? And like, how do we navigate that? Because in college, we go out and we get drunk and we have sex. And how do we talk about that? It's a really hard thing. And we're trying to figure out how to talk about that with students, because we don't want to say, yeah, you can absolutely have sex when you're drunk. Like, people are going to, and like, it happens, but how do you navigate that? How do you make sure it's consensual and make sure every step along the way that it's what both partners or whoever's involved wants to do?
That's great. I think that, like you said before, having those conversations just about having sex on college campuses and making sure that everything is consensual, and that even though like there may be other factors involved like alcohol or other things, like it's really important to open up those conversations to make sure that everyone is aware and understands exactly what they are partaking in, to avoid any more instances like this.
Yes.
Is there anywhere that people can get involved with It's On Us?
So for those in that don't go to UMass Amherst, you can apply to be in a chapter via the website itsonus.org. There's a little drop down right next to Take the Pledge. You can click on it and you apply to have a chapter. That makes you the ambassador. You will then be in contact with the guy who kind of like organizes whatever in your area. You can also look up on your campus's page where you can just search like, do I have It's On Us at my university or college? And you can join your own organization there. But at UMass Amherst, we have an Instagram. It's itsonus.umass, where we share information, talk about what we're doing, our meetings.
Great. Definitely check that out, especially if you are a student at Amherst. Follow them on Instagram. We follow them. It's pretty great.
That's how we got connected.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and I think that what I love about It's On Us is that it's student-led, provides like leadership opportunities for students as well. And because no one knows better, I think, than students and survivors themselves on how to address this issue. So I love that it's very student and survivor-centric. So that's really great. I just want to move forward and talk about your work with Every Voice Coalition. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about what that is for those who don't know, and what you do as your role as regional director?
Yes. So the Every Voice Coalition is a grassroots nonprofit organization in Massachusetts that was founded in 2016, I think, by 8 people who were in college. They were in their basement. They were talking like, this is insane. We are hearing and seeing these statistics of sexual assault that we're not seeing on paper. You know, I'm hearing constant stories about sexual assault that are happening, but we're not talking about it in conversations about colleges and universities. So they went to Senator Bronsberger at the Massachusetts State House and said, hey, we want to do something about this. We know that there's the Clery Act, where colleges across the country have to make their crime statistics report at the end of the year. And we're seeing that so many of these statistics show zero incidences of rape at a college campus where there's like 5,000, 10,000 students. And when the, you know, sexual assault statistics, 1 in 3 women will be sexually assaulted between 18 and 24. What's going on here? So with Senator Bronsberger, they wrote up a bill, it's now currently H-1208, which is a campus climate survey bill. So that bill would require for universities in Massachusetts to every 2 years have a survey that would be able to create statistics around sexual assault on their college campus that would then be made available on the college's website so that prospective students, their parents, current students, and the administration can see. Because without the transparency about the statistics of sexual assault, how are administrators and universities going to do anything to stop it? Because a lot of them are not. So holding universities accountable for sexual assault. Then the second one is H-1209. So that came around because of the rolling back of the Title IX guidelines at the federal level. Basically, it's not, you know, you can't make Title IX happen in a state by state, but you can add, like, you know, add policies and laws that are related to it that hold schools accountable and be able to create support for survivors. So H-1209, it sets up trauma-informed training for responsible employees, a confidential resource advisor where a survivor can go to that does not trigger a Title IX investigation. It's somebody who's not a mandated reporter. And then it also requires information sharing between students and universities and students so that the university on October 1st has to send an email to the students where they get all of the information about the Title IX at their school. Where, what are your resources at this school, so that there's this well of knowledge that then, you know, if a sexual assault occurs, because it does and will, where can a victim go? What can they do? Because so many students are thrust into Title IX investigations that are really traumatizing because they don't know that they're telling a mandated reporter what happened. Like their RA. Your RA is a mandated reporter at UMass, mm-hmm. at least. I don't know about other schools.
Yeah, I think everywhere.
Yeah. And then there's one more, which is really, really... Oh, two more. The Memorandums of Understanding setting up relationships between local area rape crisis centers, women's health centers, and the university. And then the last one is, so students who are sexually assaulted, when they go to report, and maybe they were under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and that's breaking the school's code of conduct, that they're not expelled, because that has occurred in Massachusetts.
I think that's really amazing, especially, like, targeting the legal system and making laws, because... like what you said, we need to hold schools accountable, yeah. and I feel like there's really nothing in place to actually do that. And so we see, like, these, we see the discrepancies between the statistics that colleges are reporting and then what actual students are reporting themselves. Yes. Like, I wrote an op-ed about this, and from one source, I forget which one, but it said that something ridiculous, like, almost 80% of colleges and universities all across the country have reported that there are zero incidents of sexual assault that happened on their campus. Like, and yet we see, like, you know, the statistics vary, but it's anywhere from, like, 1 in 3 to 1 in 5 female students report that they will be sexually assaulted at some point during college. And for men, it's, I think, 1 in 10 or 1 in 6, like, somewhere around there. But even so, like, there's just, like, this huge discrepancy, and it's so crazy how, like, no one is being held accountable. And I think, like, there's a lot of issues with Title IX, and a lot of it stems from the administrations itself, and they just consistently silence survivors at the expense of, like, their own reputation. And so that's one of the reasons why we wanted to create Survivor Sisters, is to give survivors a voice and say, like, hey, I'm not backing down. Like, I'm sharing my story, I'm saying what you did, and I'm not going to be silenced.
Can you talk a little bit more about your specific role with Every Voice Coalition?
Mm-hmm. So I'm the regional director of Central Mass. So I organize students at colleges like Northeastern, which isn't Central Mass, but we have to divvy up all of the colleges that are related with Every Voice Coalition into categories. So I do work at Clark University, UMass Dartmouth, UMass Lowell, Worcester State, Northeastern, Bentley, and Endicott.
Shout out Frankie.
Yeah, Frankie, Bentley.
Frankie, DM me, get involved. We need more people at Bentley. So I don't have students at every single school because it can be hard. It's a lot of work to do to be involved in the Every Voice Coalition. I put in about 10 hours of work a week on average, sometimes less, sometimes more. And I organize I basically am like, I delegate the tasks that we come up with as a steering committee of the Every Voice Coalition. Like, we did a red letter drive where we wrote about 1,000 letters to Representative Roy of the Committee on Higher Education, because we're really relying on him right now. He's been very supportive of us because these bills have gone through three sessions now. He's been very supportive of us, but it's on him right now to be able to push these through, to be able to get them heard on the floor so that we can get these bills passed. It's the first time, second time, it is the second time in the state's history that 2/3 of all legislators have co-signed on to co-sponsor a bill, which is phenomenal. So the moment that these are heard, they're going to pass, and we need them so badly. And we set the red letters in because it was the red zone, and we were like, okay, it's in the red zone. Like, you need to act now. Like, it's time to get these through and to get them heard. No more waiting. Like, we can't wait through another red zone. Guess what? We did. He still hasn't pushed them through, and he has 1,000 red letters on his desk. So we start phone banking. So I called his desk guy the other day and was like, hey, it's Nora. I'm here with the Every Voice Coalition. I'm here, you know, in support of the bills. Really would love for Chairman Roy to, you know, speak on the bills favorably and push them through and get them heard on the floor. And he was like, yep, we've been getting a lot of calls from you guys all day. So it's like we're flooding the state house. And I think that they don't, because students often aren't very politically active, that they don't look to us as much as they should when it comes to issues that, it's kind of like, you know, abortions and men. It's like men shouldn't be making laws about abortions without the input of women who it directly affects. So, you know, we shouldn't have laws in Massachusetts or the country around sexual assault when students' voices aren't heard in regards to them. And that's why I went and I testified in front of the Higher Ed Committee last spring with my dad by my side, my rock, to give my, you know, why do we need these bills, being able to highlight how this would have impacted my life and others' lives.
Yeah. That's really amazing. Like, yeah. That's super cool. Yeah. And I think it's just, again, like you said, it just highlights the need for student and specifically survivor-centric leadership on this issue, because no one knows better than them. Like, they know what they need, and they know what needs to be fixed, because they're the ones who are actually going through the processes. Yeah. They're the ones dealing with the system, and they're the ones being failed and silenced by the system.
Yes.
Is Every Voice Coalition nationwide? Like, there's chapters everywhere, or is it just specific to Massachusetts?
It's just specific to Massachusetts. So we just do work in the Mass State House, but with the co-chair, John, he and I and two others have been doing work to reach out to other states. We are working on it in New Hampshire, in Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey. Shout out. and then also Hawaii, Maine. And so we're trying to also be able to not just have Massachusetts have these, but be able to bring them to other states too. But we are very, you know, we have about 200 members. It's comprised of young adults, 20, 25, around that age range.
How do you think your work with Every Voice Coalition and It's On Us has made an impact?
I know since starting with It's On Us and the Every Voice Coalition, I've received DMs and texts and other messages from people who thank me for being very vocal on platforms of social media or just in day-to-day life. Also going out to speak at, I went to SNU University and I gave was the guest speaker for their Take Back the Night.
Wow.
I also went to UMass Dartmouth and did a little talk too. So being able to have an impact, to be able to go out into the world, I guess, and talk to people, whether it be at other schools or whether it be at my own home at UMass, being able to make sure that the language that I'm using is having an impact on people so that I'm not putting it down to the gender binaries of women are sexually assaulted, but non-binary folk are sexually assaulted, trans folk, queer folk, men are sexually assaulted, and being able to sort of broaden that so that everybody's voice is heard. And that's why Every Voice Coalition is Every Voice Coalition. It's every survivor, every student is heard, and just kind of broadening the movement. And I mean, I know that I've been able to be a resource for some survivors that have come to me and disclosed their sexual assault and look to me for resources at UMass, or what are their options and what they can do.
That's really amazing. But is it ever triggering when you are, like, approached by people? Because the work you do is amazing, but, like, when you hear all these stories and you see how many people it affects, because I know it's really triggering for me, just in my own personal story, and then hearing how this hurts so many, like, people. Yeah. Does it ever, like, yeah, really get to you, or, like, even make you, like, want to take a step back from your advocacy?
Mm-hmm. And more than that, how do you navigate that?
Yeah. I have not come to a point where I feel like I need to take a step back from my advocacy, because the Every Voice Coalition, and It's On Us, I've been able to develop very strong relationships with those I work with, and being able to be very, like, upfront, like, hey, you know, telling Sophia or whoever is in It's On Us, like, I can't come to the meeting today because, you know, I'm having a really hard day, like, especially around the Kavanaugh hearing, I needed to sort of take a total step back, and because we're survivors, it's compromised a lot of survivors, it's very, people are very understandable that if you need to take a step back, if you need to take a week off, if you need to leave, nobody's upset. But that being said, because I have this second pillar, my community of people, and It's On Us and Every Voice, I feel I'm driven and inspired by the work that they do and the work that we do together to continue. And they're there by my side. If somebody says something against the work that we're doing, I'm able to immediately call them, text them, or grab their hand and say, hey, this just happened. And they're there, like, immediately. And it is really triggering sometimes, the way that, you know, knowing exactly when I can talk about what happened to me. Because I think because what happened to me wasn't life-threatening, I have a really hard time holding this identity as a survivor, because my life wasn't threatened. And I've been working on it, because it's a hard feeling to have when it's almost like this, I'm not, this isn't me. But realizing that what I'm really surviving is the aftermath. Mm-hmm. The impact that it has on my physical well-being, my body, the way that my body holds the trauma, the way that it has completely, it made me really depressed and very suicidal. Mm-hmm. And that is what I survived and what I'm still surviving, the impact that that's had on me and not the event. And I think that a lot of people need to know that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's not, again, like, it just goes back to the misconception that, like, sexual assault needs to be this super violent physical thing. And that's not, it's not really, yeah.
Like, to you, with someone you know, that it has to be, like, this stranger that you've never met.
Yeah, like, there's just this false narrative that it's, like, a bad guy, you know, who's, like, gonna beat you up and, like, hold you at gunpoint, or, like,
punch you. Or even with your relationship, like, a lot of people, like, oh, like, he was your boyfriend, like, that's not rape, like, he could do whatever, like, you're consenting just by being in the relationship with him, like, stuff like that.
Especially in my relationship in high school, not having, I remember, this is actually a story, I remember the day that he and I broke up. A couple days after, he came over to talk to me, and I remember telling my mom, like, he's coming over and, like, we're gonna talk, and she was like, absolutely not. She called the cops because she thought that he was gonna, like, hurt me or kill me. Like, she had horror stories up her sleeve, and, like, this is the kind of guy that, like, people thought he was. And it wasn't something that I thought was, it wasn't to kill me, it was a very unhealthy, very manipulative, coerced sexual relationship. And it's had a very, very strong mental impact on me that has caused me to be in really bad situations with my own self.
Thank you so much, Nora, for sitting down with us and for reaching out to us. She reached out to us on Instagram. Woo. And it's been so amazing to hear from you. I know we are super inspired by you, and when we first heard from you, we definitely wanted to get to know you more and get to know your story, because we felt like you had so much to say and you'd be so empowering for other people to hear. Other people need to hear the work that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's so amazing. You should be really proud of yourself, because we're really proud of you. Mm-hmm. And
thank you.
I guess to close off, what do you hope for the future?
Huh. My hope for the future is that, you know, as I'm graduating in the spring, that I can continue to do that work that I'm doing in different ways, whether that's working at a rape crisis center, whether that's working on a political campaign, or whether that's working on some other grassroots organization stuff. I also want to continue to be able to make connections like this with you too, because it's absolutely wonderful to be able to spread the word more and share my story. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that empowers others. And I hope the work that's been done around this Me Too movement and around being able to, you know, pull the blinds off of sexual assault on college campuses and in other situations, that we're talking about it, and we're talking about it in a way where people aren't worried to talk about it, that it becomes a part of the conversation, and that changes laws, that changes the way that we look at sex education, and that's the way that we, that changes the way that we look at college experiences, because rape should not be a part of the college experience.
Definitely.
Definitely. I think we definitely agree. And that's what we're doing here at Survivor Sisters too, to open up that conversation. Yeah, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Could do anything that you set your mind to. Like, I'm so impressed by you and everything that you've done, and just speaking with you today.
I'm very, very happy to have made this connection, because the work that you're doing is really important, and you're lifting up voices and spreading the word, and that's going to have a huge impact.
Okay, so that concludes our fourth episode. Check us out on Instagram at Survivor Sisters and show some love over there. If you are a survivor and you want to come on and share your story, definitely reach out to us. We would love to have you. If you don't want to share your story publicly but just want to do so privately, we are definitely a resource for you to use. We're a safe and supportive space. And thank you to all the people who have trusted us with their stories. We really appreciate it. It's very humbling, and it's such an honor that you feel safe and supported here at Survivor Sisters. Check us out at Teespring for our merch. It's really cute stuff. We're wearing some stuff today. And all of the proceeds will be donated to organizations that directly combat sexual assault on college campuses, like It's On Us and Every Voice Coalition. So definitely check that out. And with that,
we will not be silenced.